This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
The other philosophy of life, which is the one that I am adopting more and more frequently, is that when I shave in the mornings, for those who shave, but you know, when you comb your hair in the mornings, I look at myself and I remind myself that today may be the last day of my life. And one day, that statement will come true. And if it is your last day of your life, what am I going to do today with that precious day? How am I going to behave? How am I going to interact with my loved ones? How am I going to contribute a little grain of sand to the happiness of those I care for and to my own happiness? And all of a sudden, when you ask yourself that question and truly believe that today, I repeat, as one day will be the case, will be your last day, you know, your perspective changes.
Just a little snippet there from this week's guest on Over the Influence, Rafael Briceño, who is originally from Venezuela, has travelled the world, currently in Scotland, and we're just genuinely chuffed to bits that Rafael said yes to our invitation to join us on the podcast. He is a much-loved community member. He has got so much to share. And you'll hear that Rafael drank for the best part of 50 years, five decades of alcohol. He is now living and loving an alcohol-free life. Let's get into the episode.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Danielle from Hertfordshire, and I'm nearly 10 months sober now. I was probably what you'd call a grey area drinker. I didn't drink all the time, but when I did, I didn't really have an off switch, and it just left me feeling low energy, low motivation, and just not really an optimal version of myself. I joined the OTI community after listening to the awesome Over the Influence podcast for quite a few months, and I've never looked back. There's Zoom calls every week on different days. You actually get to see Shaz and Ben, which is so exciting, and make that kind of community a reality and really come to life. I would highly, highly recommend joining the Over the Influence community. It was the game changer for me to feel connected in sobriety.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence, as always. And we mean this. It's really good to have you listening wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey, on your AF adventure. You might be years into this, you might be sober curious, you might still be drinking, you might have a hangover while you're listening to this. None of it matters. We're just very, very grateful that you do. My name is Sharon Hartley. I'm based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I am 50 years old. I drank far too much, far too quickly, and far too often. When you are listening to this episode, it will be my six-year soberversary eve. 6 years I've been doing this, and let me tell you, it just gets better and better and better. I realise I sound like a stuck record, but it's the truth. My only regret in this entire AF thing that I decided to do is that I didn't do it sooner, but here we are. I don't do this on my own. Ben Anderson, how are you?
Hi. Fine, thank you. I'm Ben. I'm 36. I live in Liverpool. I met a, you know, those no filter people, people who just say what's in their head straight out of their mouth. I met one of them this week, a mutual friend, and they went, they said you do a podcast. I was like, yeah. What's it about? Oh, it's about alcohol-free life. And, you know, you give up one thing, you gain so much more, et cetera, et cetera. And they went, were you a proper alky then?
Oh, man alive.
Were you a proper alky then?
Really? And I went,
well, no, I mean, I was definitely, I was drinking on stress. You know, that was something I was doing. I was drinking on my own, That was something that I'd started to do more of. I was lying about how much I was drinking because a few means two, not six. There were signs that things weren't going the right way for me. But no, I didn't have any kind of withdrawal symptoms, physical withdrawal. But they weren't interested at that point. You know,
you weren't a proper alky?
Weren't a proper alky.
Oh,
but
man.
You know, if you've listened to this podcast before, you'll know that, you know, my whole thing is that you remove one thing and you gain so much more. You don't have to wait for rock bottom to decide to remove alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, he just kind of meets me and he's going, oh, piss off. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so much more to it, and that's what we like to do on this podcast. We love to sing about the joys of alcohol-free life, because you really do. You give up one thing and gain so much more.
Yeah.
And that's something that I know our guest feels today. I'm
can't
so
wait.
Excited
I can't
about our
wait.
Guest, Chaz. The gentleman is
I know.
With us.
You know what? Oh, where to start with this week's guest? In fact, what I'm going to do, Raphael, I'll give you your full introduction in just a sec. I told somebody within our community that we were recording with you today, and this person messaged me straight back, and his words were, Raphael will be amazing. So we already know that this chat is going to be really, really good. Raphael Briceño, who is from Venezuela, who is, as we record today, 570 days alcohol free. It gives us enormous pleasure to welcome you to Over the Influence. First question, how are you doing? How are you feeling, Raphael?
Very well, thank you, Chas and Ben. It's a happy occasion for me to be here with you today and for you to give me the platform to share a bit of my acquired alcohol-free wisdom with you and the community. So thank you.
I love this. Yeah, so you are one of our fabulous community members. I suppose my first question is, living in Venezuela, or at the time at least anyway, how on earth did you find OTI, the podcast? What happened?
Yeah, well, I call that providence or sheer luck, depending which way you want to look at it. You know, I kind of believe that there is a higher being, whatever you may want to believe that is, a higher energy, higher force, or a God that helps us guide our lives. And sometimes, you know, there is a helping hand. And there was a time when I was, 570 days ago exactly, when I was in Venezuela. I spent about half my year there. I have a home there. I had been on a binge. And this particular binge was ending particularly bad. And I was just fed up with it all. I mean, it'd been over 50 years of me drinking progressively as a high-functioning alcoholic most of the time, but nonetheless an alcoholic, most of the time in denial. And I was reaching a point, as you know, most people do, where you begin to drink more than you should, and it's affecting you more than you should. You're beginning to drink on your own, and you begin to hide your drinks. So I was going through all of that. But this particular weekend, I realized that I was facing much bigger consequences than just the normal impact that alcohol has on people, that I was probably going to lose my second marriage. I was making a total fool of myself and wrecking my very beautiful wife and life, and it was time. So in the middle of my hangover, I went on the internet and began to search for the third or fourth time probably for some help. I had previously reached out to Alcoholics Anonymous some years back. And I'd reached one or two communities like this one, but it didn't get me anywhere. I won't mention what the communities were there. It's not relevant. But I did come across OTI, thankfully. And the rest is history. I mean, I think it was a combination of me really, really wanting to stop this life of, that was being fueled by alcohol. And at the same time, this amazing fortune or providence that I was able to find OTI in the middle of a huge hangover. And OTI, you know, I was actually hangover when I rang up and I connected on the Zoom, and OTI changed my life. So I know I changed my life. I know that I've been told this before. It was me who changed my life, but I will never be able to explain sufficiently what an amazing enabler OTI was for me, because I had consciously thought about this, I'd read about this. I'm quite a studious individual. I'd swallowed up all the lead on alcohol over the years. I was there in terms of how to stop, but I just couldn't. And OTI was a catalyst for me in such a way that I have never, you know, encountered before. And I have been able to kick the habit and or the addiction. So the first thing that I want to share with you today is that I am incredibly grateful to you both and to the OTI community and to the OTI individuals who have helped me on my journey. And without you, I'm not going to go as far as saying I would never be where I am today, but I think it would have been a whole different journey. And OTI certainly made it possible for me. And therefore I'm incredibly grateful. And I would urge people who are listening to this podcast to give OTI a try, because you will find here a very genuine, very helpful, and very honest community whose only objective is the well-being of its members. And I think that is a wonderful objective. And I have, you know, all my respect for this community.
Ben Uecker, I can't. Raphael,
you know what? I love that Raphael knows us so well now that he basically jumped in and said, look, Sharon, I know you're going to say that I did it. I know you're going to say
no, he knew.
Because that's what you're thinking, isn't it?
Yeah.
Raphael, thank you. That's
thank
very
you
kind
so
of
much.
You. You're a fabulous part of that. And, you know, you talk there about individual connections. I know that today, one of the main reasons that you wanted to come on the podcast is so that you can help people who are, you know, a little bit behind. And you're 570 days. And I know that you want to give back and share some of the wisdom that you've acquired over those 570 days. Can I talk to you? First of all, you described yourself as a high functioning alcoholic.
Yes.
A couple of minutes ago. The high functioning part is because you're an incredibly successful person. You know, you talked to us at the beginning before we started recording. You said, well, where are you now, Raphael? Oh, I'm in Edinburgh at the moment. You got a house in Venezuela. You described yourself as a world citizen. The kind of life that people look at from the outside and go, bloody hell, he's doing well. You know, I want to talk to you about that, the alcoholic word, the high functioning alcoholic. Relating back to my intro, were you a proper alky then? How do you respond if that person, if you'd met that person instead of me, mm-hmm. and they'd gone, you're a proper alky then?
Yeah,
would,
I mean,
how it, would you?
Yeah, I thought about that. You know, when you brought up the word, I've never heard it before. So that's the first thing I'll say about that. I've never heard the word alky. So I've learned one more word today. My response, my immediate response would be, you know, being an alcoholic is a scale. I don't think that there is a little bit of an alcoholic and a 100% an alcoholic. I think you go on a sliding scale that will get progressively worse as your problem increases or as your addiction increases and as the years go by. So when I was 25 years old or 36 years old, as you are now, Ben, and I was drinking 2 bottles of whiskey, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. And I mean 2 bottles of whiskey a day. Not every day, but certainly on a weekend, I would, you know, with my friends, you know, yeah, go through to a couple of bottles of scotch. I didn't think I had an alcohol problem because my body was geared up to be able to respond to that level of alcohol. And I was able to recover pretty swiftly and continue to perform, both at work and in my life. Looking back on it though, you know, 2 bottles of scotch on a single sitting is pretty bad news. So whoever tells you that that's not problematic is obviously, you know, blindfolded. And I clearly was blindfolded back then. And that's the key point that, you know, hence it, my response to your question, was I anarchy? Yeah, I mean, looking back on it now, yes, I was. Did I think I was anarchy back then? No.
Now, what a perfect answer, Raphael, because we haven't talked about this for a long time, but actually it's going back to that it's not black and white thing. It is a scale. You know, the World Health Organization talk about harmful drinking, hazardous drinking, dependent drinking.
Yeah.
Well, you don't just go from, you know, drinking normally in inverted commas to dependent drinking, do you? You know, there's a process there. And I think that's the point I suppose I was trying to make to this person, is that I recognized that it was going in one direction. And although I, you know, I didn't get to that point, I jumped off at a point where I went, I don't want to find out. I don't want to keep playing this game. Sharon came into my life at the right time, you know, and OTI came in at the right time. Right, you pulled yourself together, Sharon, after Raphael's
lovely comments about OTI. Raphael, thank you for what you said about the community. And I'd like to talk more about that further down the episode about connections and the importance of community. Before we started recording, and I asked you your age, because I think it's really important and it's really relevant to this episode. You're 65 years young next month. And can I just say, for the record, you look fantastic.
No,
you look
thank
so
you.
Good. You're glowing. You are just, you've got the AF sober glow there, Raphael. And you've shared with us thank in you. The past, in the community, on the Zoom calls, within the forum, that you drank for 50 years. 50 years, that's half a century of alcohol. That is a long time.
It is.
Where do you begin to even think about stopping, to start to unpick that? There is so much, isn't there, to unlearn about alcohol in that time.
Completely.
Where did you start, Raphael?
That's a tough question. Where do you start? It's been 50 years. I guess very briefly, it would be important to just make a note of where I started to drink, which was when I was very young. I mean, I was probably 12 or 13. I grew up in a culture where drinking was very much encouraged by your friends and relatives. It was a thing to do, particularly for males. And therefore, by the age of 15, it was quite a normal thing for me to sit in my parents' house with my friends with a couple of bottles of rum and stay up drinking until 3 o'clock in the morning. And that was absolutely normal. I mean, it was, you know, no one had any concerns about that. You know, if I roll the film forward 40 years and I was in my mid-40s and I went to Venezuela once and met up with my family and I was trying to go sober. You know, my close relatives were mocking me because they thought I was out of my mind. You know, how could I not drink? It was the thing to do. It is still to this day the thing to do. So I have a number of challenges on that front, which I am successfully navigating. So where do you start to think about not drinking? In my case, I started thinking about this when I was 19 years old. I was attending Manchester University and I knew I was drinking too much. And I had my first 3 months dry period when I was 19. I mean, that is almost 40 years ago. So that's when I started. It is a long time ago. Yeah. I mean, I don't have a specific answer for that. It's been a journey. It has been a journey as you said, Sharon, many people have said before, I would have rather have started earlier and with a community like OTI, because it would have saved me a huge amount of pain. It would have saved the people around me a huge amount of pain. And I have no doubt that I would have had, you know, if possible, because I can't complain about my life. My life has been, as you, as you said, I mean, I really, you know, I am blessed. I'm not able to complain much about the breaks life has given me, but I think I would have been more present around the people in my life. And I think without a doubt, I would have been more successful in my endeavors. Alcohol was a limiting force, without a doubt.
And isn't that exactly what Over the Influence is all about? Is it, you're right, you know, some people come to us and they say, I've been drinking for a really long time and I really want to stop because I want to stop these behaviours. Other people come to us and go, you know what, things are all right, but I just feel like I could be doing more. You know, and
totally.
Isn't that a good enough reason to stop doing something?
Oh, completely.
It doesn't need to be shame and regret and, you know, bad decisions. It doesn't need to be that. You don't have to wait for that bit for it to stop limiting.
No.
I mean, some might say, Sharon, that it became more about fulfilling your potential than refilling your glass. Some might say that.
Squeeze that some quote in there, Ben.
Squeeze
it's
that.
Becoming trying a weekly to get in every occurrence, this, isn't it?
that is a great way to put it. So I think, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that people who are beginning this journey ought to look at this in that way, rather than look back and you know, get saddened by missed opportunities, which is very easy to do, and then it's another little crutch for you to jump onto the alcohol routine. You should realize that you're being present, wide awake, and fully engaged with the world is going to open up a huge number of potential opportunities, which is going to enhance your life. And that is really the reason why people should be doing it. That's the reason why I am doing it, because my life has taken a turn for the better. And it is the key reason. And it's not for my guilt, of which, you know, we could sit here and talk about guilt and, you know, and I'll drown in it, as many people who've drunk could attest to. You know, it hasn't been a good story, particularly when you hit rock bottom and you know, your alcoholic personality disorder kicks in. Certainly in my case, it did. So that's not a pretty story. Why look upon that? You know, I think we ought to concentrate on the currency of your present time, on the value of your present time. The way that I look at this, Ben, is that I am by training a mathematician. And I did a lot of statistics and computing and you know, that's how my brain works. And the way that I look at this is I you know, an average man in the West lives to see about 30,000 days in a lifespan. I have spent a huge amount of that value time drinking. I now look towards hopefully the next 7,000 years as alcohol-free years, where I will be able to make up for that time that I was, that I threw away being drunk and being hungover and not being present. I want to be fully awake, fully present, fully functioning, and alcohol-free.
What an amazing way to look at it. I didn't know you was a mathematician, Raphael.
Yeah, I did a lot of mathematics, yeah.
Really, really interesting. Yeah. How does it compare now, like 500 odd days in, you know, approaching 600 days, to the 50 years of drinking? I mean, it's a big question, isn't it, in terms of the life changes?
But that's not a difficult question to answer. Unlike prior ones, this is really easy for me. There is no comparison. You know, I think that I could wax lyrical on this, but I won't, because it is a very personal answer to every individual. I think that for me is black and white. It is being able to start growing again, which I wasn't able to do before because I was an alcoholic. So my life cycle was one of being drunk and not being drunk, or recovering between being drunk and not being drunk, even though I saw myself in the mirror as a completely high-performing individual without the alcohol in it. But the reality was different. The damage was real. My personality changes were very real. So when I was an alcoholic, I wasn't, you know, I wasn't the same person that you're speaking to today. I became aggressive, argumentative. I wanted to always be right. And I, you know, I wasn't listening properly. I was antagonizing my loved ones. And that's, you know, that's touching the surface. I mean, the story is a lot more, you know, complicated and horrible than what you're hearing. So, the answer is I am a happier individual. I am growing. I think that's a key point. I am beginning to grow again. So rather than stalling or declining, I feel that I have the clarity of mind to be able to apply it to getting to know myself better. I don't have the crutch of alcohol anymore. So it is forcing me to reevaluate myself, my way of thinking, my way of acting, and my life projects for the remaining of the days that I have on earth. And the value of that is immense. So, you know, it's an easy answer for me because it is day and night.
What's that process been like, though, getting to know yourself all over again in your mid-60s?
It's still tough because I'm still going through that. You know, I think I've realized that maturity and enlightenment takes a complete lifetime. And being 65, it's, you know, don't think for a moment that you will reach enlightenment by the age of 60. I mean,
we think you're wise, Raphael, wise gentleman knows it all.
It is tough. So you have to deal with your, you know, with your demons without the help of alcohol. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and realize that you could be better. And I'll tell you what word I'm using more and more frequent without shame. It is sorry. I am sorry. Or I apologize for not listening more, for not, being more empathetic to, you know, my friends, my children, my wife, my community. Because I realize unless I do that, I will not continue to learn. And as I don't want to do as I previously did, which was, you know, I was always right and alcohol made me more right than wrong. I am now entering a phase where I am considering my life and people's lives around me in a better context. And I realize that I have a lot to learn. And that's positive, but it's tough. You know, one never likes to be wrong, so.
I feel like this is the episode that we should guide the majority of new people who come to OTI to, because it feels like you're ticking off a few key themes, Raphael. Talking about the family, you know, earlier on you said that, you know, alcohol made you into a different person. You know, this is something that touches a bit of a nerve with me sometimes because I hate it. You know, that kind of in vino veritas, you know, in wine there is truth.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah, it all comes, you know, you show who you really are when you've had you say what you really think when you. And I've always fundamentally disagreed with that. I feel like one of the key reasons that I decided to stop drinking was because I'd wake up the next day and go, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I don't even think that. You know, like, why did I, you know, it did. It was the substance. It was. Alcohol changed me. It did. And like you said, I'd become argumentative or just absent-minded. You know, I just wouldn't think about, I'd just say something because I thought it'd be funny. And actually end up really insulting someone or upsetting someone. Alcohol made me into a bit of an arse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do the people around you, you know, the people that you love, do they accept that actually, you know, the substance is, because we don't want to go too deep into it, but, you know, some of the things that maybe you do look back on and weren't great moments, do they accept that this is a new version of you that they're getting to know, and that actually, you know, old you and this you are fundamentally really different people.
I guess they're realizing, certainly people that are very close to me, and that's my wife. I have four grown-up children. Well, two younger than the older two. I have two children from my first marriage, my biological children. They're now, one is close to your age, Ben, and the older one is 41. Both living in London. And my younger children are going to university. They're my stepchildren. So my immediate family and my four grandchildren are definitely very clear on what I have done. It is massive. To them, it is a complete new person in many senses, because alcohol doesn't figure at all in my life now. So because it doesn't figure in my life, and because I have been a natural leader, by the reason of being their father, is no longer in their lives while I'm around. And that's a game changer. So it is amazing to, you know, I've been with my family up here in Edinburgh these last few weeks, and not a drop of alcohol has been drunk in my presence. And it is wonderful, and they're very supportive, and they like what they see. So from that perspective, it's absolutely a godsend being alcohol free. I guess having been a high functioning individual, and never having hit that rock bottom stage where I had to go, you know, completely out of this world and into a clinic to recover. You know, there are periods when you are high functioning where you are very high functioning, and people do remember that as well and respect you for that. So I had a very successful career and a very successful life in my businesses and many other aspects, and therefore, you know, it is, you know, a give and take type of perception. And, you know, I have relatives of mine, my brothers, who are all very successful, who think I am a little bit strange that I'm still not drinking. I mean, they're happy for me. They're happy that I'm no longer drinking, but then we get into the dynamics. So, you know, am I doing something they should be doing, and they're not ready yet to undertake? And there is a dynamics there of, you know, maybe he's pointing the way because I am the elder and I am now the patriarch of my family, of a very large family. And that sets up a standard which not everyone is happy to follow right now. And therefore there is a bit of pushback there. But I think overall the end result is very positive, Ben. I think that people around me are very encouraging. Certainly my immediate family are 100% behind me, and that's been fantastic.
How does that make you feel, Raphael, having such a positive impact on those that love you dearly, and making the decision to make such a huge change in your lifestyle in your 60s?
It is actually making me feel incredibly valued by my family, and I'll explain a little bit why. I am one of five brothers, all of whom, as I've just said, are fairly successful in their lives. I mean, not necessarily economically, but, you know, they are stable, successful. And I have 14 nephews and nieces who are now in the ages of 22 to 34. They're all professional or about to become professional individuals, hardworking. It really is, you know, I'm blessed with a wonderful family. And I have become the mentor of about four or five of those nephews and nieces, not on alcohol, but on life mentoring issues. And they have told me as a way of feedback what a difference individual I have become, and how incredible the amount of benefit they're getting from our sessions are, which I never thought they would ever get from me, because they always saw me in party mode and drinking and dancing and whatever, or making a total fool of myself. So it has been a game changer for them as well.
I love that.
It's very positive.
Yeah.
It really is very positive. It's, you know, I can't commend sufficiently the difference between being, you know, under the influence and being alcohol free. You know, I think I have a role to play, and you alluded to it in the beginning of the session, which is, you know, I want to share a bit with people who are coming behind me. I express my nervousness at being here because I am a very private individual, and I would have never for 1,000 years ever imagined I would be speaking about this, you know, publicly in the United Kingdom. Not in a million years. Not in a million years. And I am doing it primarily because I think that if I had had a coach or a mentor or someone to tell me when I was your age, Ben, or my son's, by the way, my son is also called Ben, or my Ben's age, what the evils of alcohol were, maybe it would have been different. And, you know, I would have saved myself a lot of pain and a lot of money, by the way, and a lot of money. This little app that I have here, the one that counts today, also counts the money you've saved. So I've just today when I looked, it was £8,000 in the 570 days that I've been alcohol free, and I did a projection, being a mathematician, of how much I have spent.
Of course,
spent,
you did.
You know how much I've spent just on my own drinking. I mean, not the stuff that I bought for my daughter's wedding or my son's wedding or the pub rounds or the parties that I threw or anything like that, just on my own drinking, I reckon I have spent about $250,000 wow. in my life, you know.
Oh,
that's just
God.
On my drinking. So I would say $500,000, you know, of my hard earned income, I should say, has gone to the alcohol companies, which I think is daylight robbery. I mean, that's another subject, but you know, I think that we need to be awake to the fact that these companies are in the business of making us addictive to alcohol because they're raking in the profits.
We could talk for a long time about that. We could talk about, you know, policy as well, but we won't because no. I know that you're very keen to help the individual here, the one person who's listening to this. In terms of then, you know, you say that you are a mentor and that you support members of your family. In terms of alcohol-free life and, you know, this real sense that it's changed how you live every day, what are you hoping that it brings you? Like, do you feel like, are you aiming for something here? You know, is there an end point, or is this just... is it just a choice that you need to make every day? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Because if you've lived a life that has brought so much success, you know, you do need, people say to me quite a lot, you know, and you read it in the books, that whole idea that, you know, you need to know where you're going. To get somewhere, you can't just steer a rudderless boat. You know, you've got to have the kind of destination in mind. Have you got a destination in mind with this or not?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, yes. I am by training what is referred to as a scenario planner. So I am continuously mapping out different scenarios on a number of fronts, and I won't go into more detail than that, but I put that
That
out.
Sounds like my brain, by the way, Raphael.
I think we all are.
I mean, approach. Well, it could go like this, it could go like that.
And I think we all are to a degree. I actually spent quite a bit of my career doing strategy planning, and therefore, scenario planning is part of strategy, and therefore I was trained on a scenario planning. And I apply a bit of that to my life. But in answer to your point and why scenario planning comes into this is that I spent a long time, particularly in my drinking days, trying to map out those end objectives and working hard to get in there. And I was very successful in doing that. During those days, I also looked back quite a bit and try to learn from the past so that I could redirect my life towards the future. So all good stuff, all very, you know, very proper and very useful. As I began to reach my 60s, you know, something, and for the people who are there going into their 60s, you know, it's just something that we all kind of know is out there, but we don't know when it will hit. You know, you get to a point where you still feel very competent. You feel that you've reached a point in your career, your life, where you can continue to contribute to society. And a lot of us hopefully will continue to do so. But society kind of tends to, you know, look at you a little bit differently, and you begin to reassess where you are at in your life. And this is where we need to be extremely careful with crutches like alcohol, because it is damn too easy to actually rely on alcohol to prop you through those years of uncertainty, let's call them, where you're, you know, you spend your lifetime building a career and a family, you hit your 60s, and then you're waking up to, you know, now what? You know, where is my next life project? And I am one who is always planning out ahead what I will be doing next year and the year after and in 5 years' time. I still do that. The main difference with my alcohol-free life and my personal growth is the following. I no longer look back anymore as much as I did, and I no longer look forward as much as I should perhaps, or certainly did. And the reason is that I've woken up to the fact that if you do that continuously, you're either spending your time wallowing in the past or trying to build a future that may never come. This is an old sage saying that, you know, we've heard it 1,000 times before, but I'm now really grasping it. If we're not careful, you're not living today. And if you're drinking and not living today, then you're just basically not living. You're not present. You're not doing, you're not spending time with your kids. You're not doing valuable stuff for the community. You're not helping other people. And more importantly, you're unhappy. So if the whole objective of existence, of a human's existence, is to search for happiness, getting your head in the past, regretting what you've done because you drank, or thinking ahead to a future life without alcohol is just doing more of the same. I just decided that alcohol will be out of my life. I have better clarity of mind. I am more present. I'm more there, and I'm happier. I mean, call it being egotistical, but that's what it is. I mean, I am happier.
Mm. And who can argue with that? You know?
Well, yeah.
I'm happier.
Exactly. That, I mean, full doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's just what it is. You know, alcohol was such a devil and such, you know, such a threat to my happiness that I, a lot of people have said, Sharon, and I totally agree with that, that life without alcohol doesn't necessarily become rosy immediately. No, I mean, life continues to go on, and you still have, you know, children that may get sick or may have problems, or you yourself with your relationships, or a number of other factors. As many people have said it before, the only difference is that you're now clear-headed, you're able to cope with it a lot better.
Yeah.
It sounds like then, Raphael, that the advice there, if we're going to be, you know, if we're talking to Raphael the mentor, is that actually don't spend too much time fixated on a future that might not happen. Instead, build that kind of internal, I don't know, that core that can handle anything that life throws, essentially.
Yeah,
so rather than kind of strive for something specific, strive to build that internal.
Yeah, I mean, I'd sum it up very simply, Ben, and that's simply by saying, you know, be the best version of yourself today. I mean, that is the bottom line. So there are two main philosophies of life that I've kind of, you know, upheld in my years. One is one that says, you know, I'm over summarizing here, by the way, but one is one that says, today is the first day of the rest of my life. Now, under that way of life, you have all the time in the world, right? So, you know, you're going to take your kids to the park. Well, you know, go to the pub tonight. I'll take the kids tomorrow. Or whatever. I mean, you know, today is the first day of the rest of my life. So you're always prioritizing within that context. The other philosophy of life, which is the one that I am adopting more and more frequently, is that when I shave in the mornings, for those who shave, but, you know, when you comb your hair in the mornings, I look at myself and I remind myself that today may be the last day of my life. And one day, that statement will come true. And if it is your last day of your life, what am I going to do today with that precious day? How am I going to behave? How am I going to interact with my loved ones? How am I going to contribute a little grain of sand to the happiness of those I care for and to my own happiness? And all of a sudden, when you ask yourself that question and truly believe that today, I repeat, as one day will be the case, will be your last day, you know, your perspective changes. All of a sudden, what you thought was dead important, like, for example, as I, you know, I used to, when I was an executive, crucify myself because I sent an email, which I shouldn't have sent. And then I would, you know, I would spend an hour thinking, you know, how terrible it was. I mean, what a terrible waste of an hour, you know, over an email that I don't even remember what it was about today, over projects that no one ever remembered anymore. You know, I spent innumerable days of my life worrying about stuff that really didn't matter. So I think that today is what we have. Time is our currency. There is no more valuable currency than time. Time is the only thing that, you know, Steven Jobs couldn't buy with all his money. And we have it today. So let's make the best use of it. Being alcohol-free, I should add.
Sorry, but I thought you were looking at your quotes board. Well, then
I am looking at my quotes board. You're not bored of my quotes, are you, Raphael?
No, not at all.
I know that you've listened to the podcast a lot. I really like this. This is from an entrepreneur called Naval Ravikant. I've read his quote somewhere. I don't know who he is. A fit body, a calm mind, a house full of love. These things cannot be bought. They must be earned. And what you were saying then about time, you know, that, and what you said earlier about success, and it's not necessarily financial success that you're talking about there. You know, that's what I've taken. You're absolutely right. One day it will be Alice. Do you think that you've lived your best life today, Sharon? Would you say, looking back on the day?
Probs not.
there's that bit where I said that I was really nervous about walking the Three Peaks next weekend and you laughed. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah, no, maybe, yeah. I've not been the best version of me today, laughing at my friend that was worried. I don't know. I am certainly going to take Raphael's advice and take on things on board without a doubt. Raphael, we've got so much to thank you for. Like, you know, we talk about comfort zones and, you know, you said that not in a million years did you think you'd be chatting to us on this podcast. And we are so very grateful that despite feeling anxious about it and it not being your comfort zone, that you've done that. And we also know that it's really important to you, isn't it, that you want somebody to hear this and maybe just a small part of your story would resonate. What would you say to somebody listening now that has been drinking for 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50 years, that is saying it's pointless, it's too late? What would you say, Raphael?
Well, in terms of being pointless, that's everyone's got the right to their opinion. And I think clearly I don't agree with that, but I would respect someone else's opinion. It very much depends on where in their life journey they are. And I think we need to be cognizant of that. I decided I would not go on a preaching stand to people who aren't ready or able to listen. So, you know, I for a long time wouldn't listen to anybody. So therefore, we are on a journey, and that person that says that it is pointless might come tomorrow to a different conclusion. With regards to being too late, that I certainly have a very strong opinion on. It is never too late. It is never too late to kick alcohol off your life. It is never too late to be completely sober and productive mentally and physically. And it is never too late to squeeze one more drop of lemon out of life's journey. And alcohol spoils that journey terribly. You know, it stops you living life to the full. So what I would say to an individual is, you know, have a go. And if you're able to stumble upon a community like OTI, as I did, then if you have the desire and you find the vehicle or the tools or the community to help you, you will find perhaps where I found myself and be able to be fortunate enough to be in this podcast in some time and tell your story, proudly tell your story. You know, I think that one needs to feel a bit proud of oneself, you know, along the journey of life, and give yourself a few pats. That's self-love. And I think that, you know, looking back on all my successes, which I'm very happy that I've had, there is none that I feel proudest than being 570 days without alcohol, because in a nutshell, I have found freedom, and that is invaluable.
What a fantastic way to end the episode. Honestly, absolutely brilliant. I was going to ask you to sort of sum up your journey with OTI over the last 570 days, but you've just used a word that I've used to describe my own sobriety, which is freedom. So, Raphael, thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you.
On this week's episode. And I'm so very glad, and I know I echo Ben's thoughts on this as well, that you found us on that day with a hangover, and here you are now on the podcast and a much-loved member of our community.
Oh, thank
Raphael.
You.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank you both again. You know, there are people that pass through life without fulfilling their potential, even though the potential is given, or who don't care to reach that potential. In you two, I am certain that I am facing two individuals who are absolutely exceptional in the way that you have created this community, maintained this community, and propulsed it to be the vehicle of life that it is today. And for that, I will forever be grateful to you both. So well done, guys.